This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. As we continue to focus on Japan, we should also remember the disaster visited upon Haiti 14 months ago. No tsunami, but a capital city shattered by an earthquake that killed more than 200,000 and left as many as a million homeless. Recovery continues only very slowly. On Sunday, voters in Haiti will elect a new president. This is a runoff election 4 months after a first round of voting was marred by violence and allegations of widespread corruption. And it's shadowed by two previous presidents, former dictator Jean-Claude Baby Doc Duvalier, who returned from a quarter century in exile in January, and Jean-Bertrand Aristide, expected back from 7 years in South Africa as soon as this weekend. If you've been to Haiti this past year, call, tell us your story. Our phone number, 800-989-8255, email us talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Later in the program, the legacy of the world's worst nuclear accident, a visit to the Chernobyl exclusion zone. But first to Haiti, and we begin with Jacqueline Charles, Caribbean correspondent for the Miami Herald. She joins us by phone from Port-au-Prince, and thanks very much for being with us today.
Hi, thanks for having me.
And we're hearing reports that former President Aristide may leave South Africa as early as this evening and could be back before the election on Sunday. What effect is that likely to have?
Yes, that is what we are hearing, is that he could be here as early as tomorrow morning, which will be 2 days before Sunday's historic presidential runoff election. This is the first time that the country is having a runoff in 25 years.
And the election, we're going to get to that in just a minute, but Mr. Aristide is still very popular, at least among some in Haiti.
Yes, I mean, he is still popular. It's just a question in terms of how relevant he will be, how much of an impact his presence here will have on what's coming in the next couple of days and also on the stability of the country. But what you do see on the ground is that there are banners that are welcoming his return, and both of the presidential candidates are courting, you know, his base.
And
a group of supporters who have basically been asking for his return since he was ousted in 2004.
And do we know why now?
Well, that is the $60 million question, right? Why now? I mean, Aristide himself put out a statement in January saying that he was ready to return back to Haiti at any time. But we have to remember that we have another former president, Jean-Claude Duvalier, who was here, who surprised this country and also the world with his appearance in January from France after 25 years in exile. Once he was here in Haiti, I think it was very difficult for the Haitian government or for anyone to argue that Jean-Bertrand Aristide should not be entitled to a passport, as he is entitled to under the Haitian Constitution. But in terms of the timing of President Aristide, why not before Sunday's vote, that is a question that many people are asking.
Has he said any, given any reason as to why now?
What I have been told by individuals who are close to him and who have spoken to him is that his argument has been that, look, there is an election. The two candidates in these elections are opponents. Their track record has been in opposition to him, and he believes that if he waits until after the election is decided, that the window, the tiny window for him to re-enter the country will be closed. And as you know, his presence in South Africa has been a domestic issue for the South African government. So I think what you're seeing there is just two needs, you know, coming together, and here we are today basically expecting or waiting his return to Haiti.
And since his return, Jean-Claude Duvalier has faced allegations of corruption and all kinds of human rights violations, including torture and murder. I don't think anything like that would be awaiting President Aristide.
President Aristide, upon his departure in 2004, the interim government that was put in place did form several commissions to look into allegations of misappropriation of government funds. There were a number of allegations at the same time. In Miami, a federal grand jury convened to look into allegations of narco trafficking and other allegations resulting from President Aristide. The statute of limitation of that, which is 5 years, has now run out. And we are being told by federal sources that he does not face any charges in the United States. But there is still very much a question as to whether or not he could face charges here in Haiti. What happened to those reports that was done? And at the same time, the statute of limitation in Haiti for financial crimes is 20 years. So when you talk to observers and people who are familiar with this, what they tell you is that he is taking a huge risk by returning back to Haiti because he has no guarantees either from the Haitian government or the international community.
Now let's get to the election. And, of course, that may be affected by how Mr. Aristide behaves upon his arrival. But nevertheless, we have two candidates this after the first round of runoffs. And they are the 70-year-old former First Lady, Mirlan Maniga, and Michel Martelly, a pop singer, better known as Sweet Mickey, right?
Yes. A generation separates these two individuals, and they are very different. And so what we are seeing today, what we have seen today, is a robust debate in the Haitian society about this change that is coming on them. Which of these two candidates, the individuals, the voters, would best represent them? But we also have to remember that this is an election where you had huge allegations of fraud, where in OAS, a report by the Organization of American States, found that there was fraud in every one of the 19 presidential camps. 50,000 additional votes were set aside. And so some argue, too, the elections are not so much about sort of picking a president, but really an election about credibility and how do you salvage a very controversial first round.
And it's been very difficult to get any kind of accurate polling on who might be favored. But tell us a little bit more about these two candidates. Are they how would they be arraigned in the familiar American political spectrum of left and right?
Well, both of these candidates have been identified as being right of center. For instance, let's take a guy like Michel Martelly. This is a guy who has a reputation as Sweet Mickey for mooning fans and performing in a skirt and just having these outrageous antics. That's how he's built his career over the last couple of years. But when you talk to individuals with him in terms of his policy, he's very pro-military. He was a supporter of the paramilitary. He has been in opposition to Aristide. He's viewed as leftist, a populist priest. But Michel Martelly is using populist rhetoric and reaching the masses here in this country, you know, the majority of whom are poor. Mirlan Maniga is a former First Lady. She is a PhD suborn graduate. She's a constitutionalist who still teaches on Mondays, but she, too, is very conservative, socially very conservative. But some say that her policies are viewed would be more liberal or Democrat in terms of the United States. Either way, what we're seeing is that in a country for the last 25 years where the rhetoric has been about leftist politics or populist and appealing to the masses, we have two, you know, candidates today that are very different in their approach. They're very different in their experiences. But in terms of their ideology or where they're coming in terms of left or right, they're both viewed as right. And so the question before us today is whether Haiti is going to take a term. But I have to tell you that this is a country also where ideology really has fallen at the wayside. While it's very easy for us to talk about left and right, you know, when you see these two candidates, nothing really separates them in terms of the issues or the policies. They're both campaigning on the same programs of education, national production, the farmers, security, reinstating the military. Again, very similar, very difficult to separate them in terms of their approaches. And also the election has been based on personalities in the past rather than issues in the future.
We mentioned two previous presidents who are factors, of course, Jean-Claude Duvalier and Jean-Bertrand Aristide. But there is another former president who factors into the race. We mentioned that Mirlan Maniga is the former First Lady. Her husband is still around. No, is he a factor in this race?
Mr. Maniga is still around and he's still here. I saw him last week and I actually asked him. I said, you know, you have this looming presence in this election, but you have been the most invisible but yet visible person. What's going on? And basically what he says to me is that he's not going to talk. I mean, what he has decided and what the campaign has decided and some things that it was a smart decision on their part is to allow Mirlan Maniga to step out of the shadows of her husband, a former president that, you know, people here have mixed views. There are people who will vote against Mirlan Maniga because husband who came into power in military organized elections and then he was deposed 4.5 months later. And then there are people who will vote for Mirlan Maniga because of Leslie Maniga because they saw that as a missed opportunity. He ran against Preval again in 2006 and was not allowed to go into a runoff. And so for Mirlan Maniga, these are among the challenges that she faced in addition to facing a guy like Michel Martelly who has transformed. I mean, he has gone from Sweet Mickey to Michel Martelly, speaking Hugo Boss wearing, you know, candidate. And so people initially took this candidacy as a joke, and today they are watching this and saying, oh my God, this guy could very well be president of Haiti. He enjoys, you know, support of the masses, but Mila Maniga also enjoys, you know, support in terms of the youth. So this is a very interesting race, but again, with the appearance of President Aristide, it's going to be interesting to see what the impact is going to be, you know, how it will affect Sunday, and how it will affect it beyond Sunday. Because remember, President Aristide headed one of the largest political parties here from Mila Velasquez. They did not participate in these elections. There has been cancellation because of their lack of participation, because of the fraud that was in the elections. And so right now, it's very hard to predict what's going to happen in the next couple of days, even while election officials and the government and the international community is saying the vote is still on for Sunday.
And we wanted to ask you, Jacqueline Charles, we always talk politics and, of course, recovery from the earthquake, but there are other things that are going on in Haiti. The country just celebrated Carnival, and that's the first time, obviously, they skipped it last year after the horrible earthquake. What was the party like this year?
Oh, I don't know if I would actually call it a party. No, I wrote about this because there was a huge debate society about whether or not Haiti could afford Carnival financially and morally. I mean, it was just one huge marsh pit in Port-au-Prince on that day, on Sunday, and I went out just to check it out. I mean, the party clearly was not how it was before, but Haitians, you know, they said, look, we need a relief. We have been dealing with earthquakes, we've been dealing with cholera, we've been dealing with an electoral crisis, and so, you know, they were out. But I will tell you, for the most part, in terms of the definition of a Haitian carnival or just carnival in general, we can't very well say that it was. But the weekend before the Port-au-Prince carnival, Michel Mazzoli took advantage of it, along with Wyclef Jean, who's an American, you know, hip-hop artist.
Yep.
And they campaigned together. And so for a town like Jacmel that has been rebounding since the earthquake, because it too was struck, this was an opportunity for their artisans and for that area to make some money. And so in that side, that was positive. But here in the capital, there's a lot of debate.
Jacqueline Charles, thank you very much for your time today. We appreciate it.
Okay.
Jacqueline Charles, Caribbean correspondent for the Miami Herald, with us by phone from Port-au-Prince. When we come back, we're going to focus on recovery from the earthquake 14 months ago. Stay with us. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Right now, we're talking about the aftermath of another disaster, the earthquake in Haiti. There are signs of progress, new homes and buildings sprouting up in Léogâne, and the runoff presidential election scheduled for Sunday. But in many areas, rubble still litters the streets, and residents complain that recovery is moving much too slowly. If you've been to Haiti this past year, call and tell us your story. 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. And joining us now is Tracy Raines, director of the International Response Operations Center for the American Red Cross. She works closely with Red Cross teams and their local and international partners in Haiti, and joins us here in Studio 3A. Thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
And most aid groups report that just clearing the rubble alone is proceeding very slowly. Does that reflect your experience?
It is. It's a massive, massive operation. I think if you had all of the rubble that was in Haiti after the earthquake, it would have filled the Louisiana Superdome five times over. So the sheer volume is really challenging, and it continues to be. I think there has been progress made. The rubble is out of the street for the most part. There are small programs to use some of that rubble for rehabilitation of houses and recycling that for houses. But really, the terrain and the logistics within the city at such a heavy operation is a challenge. It remains a challenge.
And there were, of course, so many people displaced and living in tent cities and, of course, even less permanent shelter than that in
right.
too many cases. I know that's one of the things the Red Cross focuses on.
It is. There were, I think, about 800,000 people in camps early on after the earthquake. That number's come down pretty significantly since then. And I think if you go through some of the camps, they are not packed wall-to-wall as they were. There's definitely progress, but it is slower than I think almost anyone would want.
And are most of those people still in the camps?
I think the numbers, they change, of course, but they're down
sure.
about a third of what they were before. So if there were about 800,000 initially, they're about 250,000 less now, which is a good thing.
And, of course, there is the threat of another rainy season, which should be beginning pretty soon.
It could be. I mean, we really dodged the proverbial bullet last year. We had a Category 1 hurricane that did hit Haiti, but it was much less than anticipated. And so, of course, we're preparing for that upcoming rainy season this year as well.
We want to hear calls with stories about their visits and what they know about Haiti. 800-989-8255, email talk@npr.org. And we'll go to Rich, and Rich is with us from St. Louis.
Hi, this is Rich.
Yeah, go ahead, Rich.
Yeah, I'm with a nutritional products company here in St. Louis. And last May we went, and we didn't get anywhere close to Port-au-Prince. The company has feeding programs where we provide nutritional products for these kids that a lot of the kids were displaced from Port-au-Prince near Cap Haitien. And it was just amazing to see the results that the kids had when they're so deprived.
When you talk about kids, you're not mentioning parents. Are these orphans?
Well, no. You know what? The kids will go to school, and their parents will send them so that they can get the nutrition. But also, some of the kids are, we have, the company I work for has established some orphanages as well, and that just, and they take in kids, and it's just an amazing effort. But like I say, it's not, the whole country has been affected by the earthquake with people that have been displaced and children left without parents, so it's still a tremendous need there. Well, I was going to say that I'm Japanese American, so it's really hurts to see what's going on. But it's good to know that, you know, what I did in May to cover the events, and we have a groundbreaking. I'm going back in mid June for a new orphanage in Port-au-Prince, which will take kids, 80 children from Port-au-Prince. So it'll be neat.
Rich, thanks very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you. You bet.
And we do focus on Port-au-Prince, Tracy Rains, but obviously there are terrible situations elsewhere in Haiti as well.
Right. I mean, obviously the main impact was in Port-au-Prince, and most of the damage that you see physically is there. But Haiti is a small country. It's a small island, so the damage was far-reaching. In addition, people who have been affected by their houses or lost their jobs in Port-au-Prince have left, gone out to other areas as well. So there's displacement across the country. I think just to one of the points that the caller brought up around schooling and kids is one of the programs that we're doing with the Red Cross, and I know others, is working with providing school fees to families to get kids back in school and to set up some sort of sense of normalcy and routine back in lives, which is so important for recovery.
School fees? It's not free?
No, it's not free. So there are school fees associated with attending elementary school and primary school in Haiti, and some of the work that we're doing is providing financial assistance to families to get their kids back in school.
How much does it cost?
I think it's not a major amount of money. I think it's less than a couple hundred dollars a year, but I can take a look at the actual figures, but it's not much. But it's when you don't have an income, don't have a job, it's insurmountable either way.
Let's go next to Ryan. Ryan with us from Somerville in Massachusetts. Ryan, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. I'd like to just comment on some of the frustrations that I ran into in working in Haiti and how complicated the bigger picture of the problem actually is. I worked there right after the earthquake for about a week or so in the direct disaster relief, and then I went back from September to December and ended up coming back right when cholera hit the country. And one of the biggest problems we ran into right there was how much other factors affected an already very difficult problem. Speaking of the elections, we had the rioting that resulted because of the elections, also with baby doc returning, and now with Aristide returning. And I was there at some of the polling stations and saw some of the direct fraud resulting from that. And what we ran into was that we had enough of a problem dealing with the epidemic right there and also the recovery effort that was still continuing from the earthquake. And yet we had the rioting that was stopping us from getting supplies.
Yeah, there were about 3 or 4 days of disturbances after the first round of presidential elections. Obviously not everywhere, but certainly in Port-au-Prince. And Ryan has a point about the cholera. That was certainly a major distraction. And obviously for many people, this was the crisis. Tracy Rains, I just wanted to ask Tracy Rains, where does that epidemic stand now? And if there's going to be more water, the form of rain and standing water in a lot of these places, are people afraid cholera could come back?
Well, I think that's a really good point and question. I think that while cholera did come up earlier this year, the scale of it was managed really efficiently and well by the humanitarian community. So while there was loss of life and impact that we don't want to overlook, I think it was kept in check very quickly. A lot of what has to do with cholera is about education and providing basic health messaging and clean water for people to use to clean and to drink. I know that the Red Cross and the entire humanitarian community has focused on that, as well as set up mobile clinics in the camps and around to treat people who come down with it and have cholera kits as well. And I think that the upcoming rainy season, certainly that's a huge part of the planning for it. One thing I do think, though, in terms of people and their concerns, and I'm talking about Haitian people and concerns, a lot of people buy food in the markets and that kind of thing, and whether it's based in fact or not, I think there's could be a concern about buying fresh fruit and fish. Even if it's perfectly safe, I think you have to be aware of the perception of people and fear that can exist. So I think as a health measure, it's contained. I think we're prepared for it going forward. But, you know, with anything like this, you have to take people's perceptions into consideration as well.
Perceptions is that they could get sick from eating this.
Right.
So they prefer at this point packaged foods?
Well, I wouldn't say it's an overall, preference, but I think that, we like to kind of put things in boxes and say, okay, click, we took care of cholera, and click, we took care of, this issue and that issue. But when you're living in Haiti as a person who has limited resources, not a lot of hygiene opportunities in terms of, running water and clean water, these things linger. And it's something to keep in mind as you're trying to provide assistance, that these are holistic issues that people deal with every single day.
Let's go to John. John on the line with us from Tampa.
Yes, hello.
Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, I went to Haiti back in April, right after the earthquake.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really devastating. Of course, I'm Haitian, and my parents just came back from Haiti. Typically, where we were close to Léogane in a little town called Gressier. And from what they told me, it's like the houses are still on the road, they haven't picked up any rubble yet. And I just talked to my uncle last night about the thing about President Aristide coming back. And he's like, some people are very on edge because Aristide wasn't really a good man when he was down there. He was very afraid right now he's going to come and destabilize everything and make everything worse from the country right now.
Well, that remains to be seen. He says from South Africa that he wants to work on education. We'll have to see what he says when he gets to Port-au-Prince. But John's point, though, about this feeling, and I think it's widespread, Tracy Raines, that it is taking so very long and so little progress seems to have been made.
Well, I think, again, I think both if you're living and working in Haiti and if you're an organization, institution supporting it, I think that everyone would like it to go faster. What we have to remember really have to pay attention to is before the earthquake, 3/4 of the population was living on less than $2 a day. There was a huge illiteracy rate. There was the government historically has had challenges. So these are very real things. And, I think we have made progress in the sense that people are living less in camps. People are getting back to some sense of normalcy. People are having some levels of jobs. People are going out and getting kids back in school. Clearly, the issue of having permanent shelters and somewhere to live is the most pressing need. And again, the issue of rubble removal and clearance and land rights, continues to be the biggest challenges that all of us face, and that people face as individuals and all the way up to organizations trying to assist. So there is progress and it's getting better. But I think that the major thing that people are looking at is people living in tents, and no one wants to see that this long in. But I think we are moving forward.
And obviously an economy that was moving ahead would help too. Are more people getting jobs? Or reconstruction normally prompts something of a boom?
Right. I mean, there's definitely signs of individual entrepreneurship. You look around, markets are bustling. People are doing small scale things, barbers and hair braiding and markets and, cell phone selling and that kind of thing. you know, it's going to be a long road to get people to a place where they actually have an income that will allow them to, for example, pay rent somewhere or to pay for school fees. That we are going in that direction, I think, in general, but it's a long road. There's no question about that. But again, I think that you have to remember the impact of the disaster, and I'm glad programs like this give us a chance a year plus later to talk about it, because while a year plus is a long time, and it's especially long if you're living in a tent, you have to compare it to what you started from.
We're talking with Tracy Raines, Director of International Response Operations Center with the American Red Cross. Of course, we're discussing the situation in Haiti 14 months after the terrible earthquake there. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's go to Beverly. Beverly with us from Sarasota.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks.
Great. I just wanted to say that I really appreciate the comments that have come through from the people who have called in as well as the guests. And as a responder with Shelterbox USA, the international organization that delivers the big green boxes that people have seen there in Haiti, I was there quite a bit during last summer, in between the end of April and the beginning of September. I went back about four times from Florida. And one of the things that was different for us, as it was for many organizations, I think, is that our response was much longer than any of the other events that we've tended to respond to in recent years. And a couple things that I wanted to point to is, first of all, we have a team that is just returning from being in the field since March 1st, that they were there to do a post-deployment assessment to find out how our product has been holding up and how it's actually been serving the populations down there. We potentially will have contingency stock going out to people that still need it. And if people don't know about ShelterBox, the one thing you should know is that we do deliver a box that serves a family of up to 10 people with not only a major tent that has been well-researched and designed to withstand winds of up to 100 miles per hour, as well as keep the water out. It has been specially designed and tested that way. It also includes cooking.
And Beverly, I know you want to extol the virtues of your program, and I know that there are many others. And I know that ShelterBox has been an important contributor to the situation there in Haiti. But as we move ahead, obviously tents are not the ultimate solution.
I completely agree with that. And that's one of the things that I wanted to get to, is to say that in this post-deployment assessment, we've recognized where things are holding up well and where they're not. And we see that transitional shelter is a huge area of potential response in the future. So I want to commend the people that are thinking along those lines. And just also to recognize that NGOs that are coming in from the outside probably will achieve their greatest success by developing multiple relationships, obviously, across the different levels of the people that are responding.
All right. I wanted to get to that point with Tracy Raines. But Beverly, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it.
Sure thing. Bye-bye.
And Beverly Raines, ultimately, this is going to be a situation addressed by the Haitian people. And obviously, something will depend on who wins on Sunday and how that administration plays out. But a lot has to do with the spirit and the will of the people. What's morale like amongst the Haitians that you work with?
Well, that's a really good question, and I think that your first guest was talking a bit about Carnival, which was, you know, last week. And to be clear, I think by any measure, it wasn't a carnival in the sense that we would, you know, picture it. And there was a lot of debate about whether it should exist and should it happen, and is it appropriate. You know, I do think that having something like that and getting things again is back to quote unquote some sense of normalcy. Is helpful. I think you can imagine if something like this happened to you after a year and a half, you would want to have some sense of thinking and doing it isn't all about, you know, the very basic survival skills that you have to have. So I think that's a good thing. The other piece, of course, is that the elections are coming up this week. And as all things in Haiti, politics are on the forefront of many people's minds. I think there's some sense of hope for what's coming next. And I think there's a lot of hope pinned on who's going to be coming in the next phase in the government. You know, that's a tricky proposition because, you know, in any case, you're looking, you're putting a lot of hope and expectations on someone coming into a very, very challenging situation, no matter who that person is. So,
Tracy Raines is director of the International Response Operations Center for the American Red Cross and joined us here in Studio 3A. Thanks very much for your time today.
Thank you again.
Coming up, Chernobyl stands as the world's worst nuclear accident. Now the area is open to tourists. Henry Schuckman visited the site with a Geiger counter in hand. He joins us next to talk about wildlife Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.